Thank you very much. Over the past 20 years, the pest complex in citrus in Florida has been, relatively speaking, it's been quite stable. And that's thanks in large part to the success of classical biological control programs that have taken place that have kept pests such as scale insects under complete biological control. And as a result, most of the citrus growers in Florida have relied in the past number of years mostly on the use of petroleum oil sprays for managing both pests and diseases such as rust mites and foliar fungal diseases of citrus. So as a result, use of broad-spectrum insecticides has been quite low in the past history of Florida citrus. Now, all that's, as we've already heard, all that's changing with the changing pest complex now that we're faced with in Florida citrus. And as was mentioned earlier, the Asian citrus psyllid first was found in Florida in 1998. Of course, we're not terribly worried about the direct feeding damage caused by this pest, but as you heard earlier, this is a very serious, it's a pest of a, or a vector of a very serious bacterial pathogen of citrus greening. And that pathogen was found in Florida in August of 2005, and shortly after we did surveys throughout the state, realized that very quickly this pathogen has moved throughout the entire citrus growing region of the state of Florida, as well as most recently being found in the state of Louisiana. So this is a very serious concern of all citrus growing states here in the U.S. And as I mentioned earlier, citrus greening disease also goes by the Chinese name Wanglongbing, which means a yellow shoot disease. And you'll hear me refer to this throughout the talk today as HLB when I talk about this disease. The effects on citrus production in general, or at least the direct effects on the fruit are bitter tasting. They're lopsided, small in size as a result of infection with this pathogen. And as you can see, the fruit on the bottom right hand of the screen here, the bottom half of some fruit sometimes will stay green. That's where you get also the name citrus greening. Effects on yield are pretty dramatic, and this is just, I threw this in here as a shot I took just a couple of weeks ago in India. This is Mosambi sweet orange, where a grove, you had 100% of the grove that was infected with citrus greening disease. And if you look closely, you'll see some of the larger green fruits here in the picture. Those are normal sized Mosambi sweet orange fruit. But, you know, the majority of the fruit here in this picture are greatly reduced in size. So worldwide, this has a very considerable reduction in yield of sweet orange. Now, this is the greening pathogen is a bacterial pathogen that's phloem limited, causes a breakdown of the phloem tissue. And so what we see is that over time, after a tree has become infected, there's a general overall tree decline and loss of production. Now, in the presence of this HLB pathogen in Florida, our psyllid management programs, or pest management programs in general, have changed quite dramatically. And so now growers are using broad-spectrum insecticides, targeting specifically the adult stage of the psyllid. Typically, programs in Florida begin with a winter dormant spray, where growers are trying to target those adult psyllids when populations are low and delay the buildup of the pest throughout the year. And then following those dormant sprays, as we get new flushes continuing throughout the year, growers are typically applying additional broad-spectrum sprays prior to the anticipated flush that's required for psyllid reproduction. So what this results in is probably on average Florida growers are applying 5 to 7 broad-spectrum insecticide applications per year just for psyllid control. So what this results in is a production cost increase for us of about $300 per acre as things stand currently. So that's a considerable change to where we were just a few years ago in the citrus production system. Now, the repeated use of broad-spectrum insecticides, this is not going to be a long-term solution for us for Florida citrus production. We're already noticing disruption of the established biological control agents. You know, Jawa was talking earlier about some studies they're doing with some of the predators of psyllid. But other pests, scale insects, we're starting to see a resurgence in scale insects such as citrus snow scale, purple scale, red scale. So we're seeing a lot of disruption that's already starting to occur because of these applications. Pesticide resistance is something else that may become a problem for us. As I was mentioned earlier in India, I was talking to people over there, and two of the products they've used intensively for psyllid management in India, dimethylate and monocrotophos, are no longer effective for psyllid control over there because of the development of pesticide resistance. So that's something that we may end up having to deal with in the future in Florida as things play out. And again, the high cost of applications, all problems that we're having to face. And so there's a real urgent need to develop some more sustainable psyllid management programs. And one thing that we need is a better understanding of this pathogen transmission by the psyllids in order to develop more sustainable programs. So our goal is to refine psyllid management programs to reduce insecticide applications to those periods when most benefit is going to be received. And in order to do that, our research is focused on a number of areas, which include basic pathogen transmission studies, looking at pathogen acquisition, transmission latency, things like that. There have been some past studies done in other countries, such as China, India, South Africa, looking at transmission of the greening pathogen by psyllids. And a lot of the information coming out of those studies was very contradictory. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that they didn't have molecular techniques such as PCR that enabled them to do some really accurate and definitive studies. Most of those studies were, the conclusions were drawn based on symptomatology, which is extremely difficult because a lot of these HLB symptoms are identical to nutritional deficiency. So relying on symptoms alone is not an easy, or is not a definitive way to know if you've had a pathogen transmission. Seasonality of transmission. Are there times of the year when transmission is more likely to be occurring in the field? And can we target psyllid controls to those specific times of the year? And then also the effects of insecticides on transmission. Can insecticides be used to reduce or prevent pathogen transmission? So those are some of the things I'm going to talk a little bit about today, at least some highlights of some of the research that's ongoing right now. And the first one thing I'll talk about is the pathogen acquisition rates. And this is in some laboratory studies. And what we've done is we've taken adult pathogen-free psyllids, placed those adults onto HLB-infected citrus plants, and held them for varying periods of time. And you can see all the way out to 52 days. And in general, what we're finding is that we never get much more than 30%, an average of 30% of the psyllids we can detect the pathogen in, even out to 52 days. So the acquisition by adults is definitely not 100%. And it's actually relatively low, especially when you go here to the next slide and you look at the acquisition by the psyllid nymphal stages. And here what we did is we actually were looking at detection of the greening pathogen in adult psyllids, which had been reared for an entire generation on HLB positive plants. So the nymphs fed their entire duration on greening infected plants. And what you can see here is that we had a range of about 11% to 100% of those adults that were reared on those plants testing positive for the presence of the greening pathogen. And I think the average here, if you look at these are 10 different cohorts that we examined here of about 50 psyllid adults each. I think the average was about between 50 and 60% acquisition rate. We did the same studies in the field, again caging both adult psyllids and psyllid nymphs on infected trees under typical growing conditions. We had a trend for pretty similar results. For adult psyllids caged on positive plants, we caged 1,000 psyllids on various number of trees in the field. And we did single psyllid DNA extractions and detection using real-time PCR. And only one out of 1,000 psyllids, we were able to detect the pathogen in. So the adult acquisition rate is very low out in the field from what we were doing this past year. Now, when you compare we saw the same trends we saw in the lab, though, with the psyllid nymphs. When we caged those psyllid nymphs onto greening infected plants, the percentage of adults that resulted ranged, that tested positive for the greening pathogen, was from 0 to 100% of the psyllids tested positive. And probably the average acquisition or the detection rate was somewhere in the 70% to 80% range. So I think what this is showing is that the nymphal stage of the psyllids is the most important stage for acquisition of the pathogen and then subsequent transmission as they turn to adults and move to new trees. And a lot of this variation, I wanted to also point out, that we're getting between the different caging groups of psyllids we had from 0 to 100%. We have some data I'm not going to go into today, but that actually was due to variation in the pathogen distribution throughout the trees. And so where the presence in different parts of the tree affected the results. We've also had a postdoc, Tim Ebert, who's been working on seasonal infection rates in the field, collecting psyllids from about 8 different grove sites in 5 Florida counties throughout the state on a monthly basis, wanting to look at the seasonality of the greening pathogen in field-collected psyllids. From these sites, he's basically doing either single psyllid extractions or pulling them in groups of 3, but generally trying to collect up to about 1,000 psyllids per sample site per sample date. And in all these groves that he's working in, these are groves that where the greening pathogen has been found in each of these locations. Now this is a summary slide of the overall data of all the data he's collected so far, well, at least from January through July of 2008. And what you're looking at here on a month-by-month basis is this blue line. This is the sample size. And the dashed line is the percentage of psyllids that tested positive for the greening pathogen. And so what we're seeing initially in some of this data is that there are some ups and downs in the psyllid population in terms of our ability to detect the pathogen. What you can see here, in March we had about a 0.2% infection rate, then we saw a drop, and we saw another increase in July. But you have to kind of also take into consideration this rate right here. This is actually over-exaggerated when you look at the actual sample size. But in general, the one thing I wanted to point out, though, was that on a grove-by-grove basis, the highest monthly infection rate we found so far has been actually 1.6%. And that was actually in areas where graining-infected trees still remained in the field. In the groves where they're under intensive graining management programs and doing a good job controlling the psyllids and removing trees, we've not found any infected psyllids in the field. So I'm going to skip through these slides real quickly here. And so I think what this shows is that the importance of this data is that it is important to remove trees when possible. You know, again, eliminate that source of inoculum. There's been a lot of reluctance on the grower part, though. The scouting cost to identify the trees and then remove them is a very expensive proposition. And so if you have a grove where a large percentage of the trees actually are graining infected, you know, that might mean that a grower goes out of business. So depending on where you are in the state, we actually have some locations where growers are deciding not to remove trees and go with an insecticide-only approach to psyllid management. And so I'm just going to quickly go through this last set of slides here on some of the insecticide work we're doing. One of the questions we have is, can insecticides prevent pathogen transmission? So we're looking at soil-applied systemic products and foliar insecticide products, looking at, can they cause mortality of the vector prior to transmission? And if so, how long does those effects last in terms of effects of pesticide residue degradation? And we've been doing this in the lab where we have imidacloprid-treated and untreated citrus plants, challenging those with HLB-positive psyllids. And right now we're currently holding more than 100 plants, waiting to get PCR-positive results out of these. Typically it takes about 8 to 12 months before we get a PCR-positive result back out of these plants from psyllid transmissions. But you can see we're already starting to get a lot of interesting symptoms developing on these plants. So this is something that's in progress. And lastly, I just wanted to mention that we also have a PhD student, Rosanna Sarakawa, who is, as part of her dissertation research, she's looking at psyllid transmission of the graining pathogen. And one of the things she's looking at are electrical penetration graph studies, or EPGs, and correlating the feeding behavior with pathogen transmission. And one of the things she's also including in those studies is this insecticide component, looking at how the insecticides affect the feeding behaviors and pathogen transmission. So here's her setup, her EPG setup she's working with in the lab. I'll just show you real quickly. She's got a psyllid wired up here, and you can see this is actually a psyllid that has died after feeding on a imidacloprid-treated plant. But what she's doing, this is a typical graph, 24-hour recording of psyllid feeding behavior. She's working right now to characterize those behaviors and compare those to psyllids that are feeding on imidacloprid-treated citrus. And what she's found early on that's really exciting is that after you have a psyllid feeding on an imidacloprid-treated, the stylets start probing into that plant, the feeding behavior of the psyllid changes quite erratically. And within about a 20-minute period, it kind of goes flatline and we have the psyllid death. And so this is actually, some of the preliminary results is actually pretty promising, and we're excited to see what type of work comes out of this and the effects of these pesticide degradation residues on the ability of psyllids to transmit. So final thoughts, Anyways, I'm around, so if you have any questions, please let me know and I'll be glad to catch up with you afterwards. Thank you.